Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Welcome back to Classic Business and this week's Digital Natives. Yuval Noah Harari's latest book, Nexus, a brief history of information networks from the Stone Age to AI, has so far divided opinion. It's a very thought-provoking work and explores how information has driven human power structures throughout history and now in the age of artificial intelligence presents entirely new challenges as well as opportunities for humanity. He does seem to focus more on the challenges, though, and joining me to unpack the implications of Nexus and review the book, especially what it means for us here in South Africa, is Johan Steyn, our regular AI commentator, leading voice in AI and ethics and founder of AIforbusiness.net. Johan, welcome. You said you've devoured Nexus. What did you, as a broad opening comment, think of Harari's latest book?
Yeah, Michael, been a big fan of his since 2014 when he published Sapiens. What I like about him is that he's not a techie, he's not an AI person, he's a historian and a philosopher. He gives us warnings, which we need to take with a pinch of salt here and there. But I think the main thing that came out for me is that just the fact that we have such advanced information technology and networks does not necessarily mean we are progressing as humans. We are probably digressing because every man and his dog now, so to speak, can have an opinion and can spread news or fake news for that matter. And then that brings us to a free speech. Can everyone not say what they want to say? And how do we regulate it? Who do we listen to? It's a book that really made me think, and it's such a great book to read. But I must say, I ended the book thinking, wow, this was incredible. I'm even more confused now than I've been before, which still makes it a great read, but it's not going to give you a lot of answers necessarily.
Yeah, well, and often isn't that also the job of an author or an artist even to sometimes hold up the mirror to society so that we can look at it, we can reflect, not necessarily give you the answers or even suggest what they could be, but to make you think, to stretch you a little bit. And if it's done that, then it's certainly worth reading. But of course, you don't have to agree with everything in it. It, you know, Harari argues, and I haven't read the book, but, you know, from what I've seen, there was an interview on CNN as well. But he seems to argue that AI is reshaping information networks in ways that challenge human control. What is his central argument in the book? And how do you think, you know, if we look at it, you know, this evolution of human communication networks, how does it compare to other revolutions that we've seen in the printing press or the internet? Why is AI now such an existential departure?
Yeah, look, he's quite famous for that. He leans toward an existential view of AI. And I must say, he has shaped me in a great deal about leaning the same way. A lot of his work, especially his talk at Davos, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, some of his other videos that we can see. But look, he compares it to the printing press, which was a revolution in Europe. It spread information. The information was largely controlled by the church at that time in Europe. And now different people could start printing and spread their ideas. It led to the a number of things, the scientific revolution, the Reformation for that matter, the loss of control of the Catholic Church in Europe at the time. But it was still, call it a dumb technology. We write what we think and it's being printed and it's being spread. What he's arguing, and I must say I do agree with him to some extent, is that with the rise of conversational AI, large language models and the like, that AI is now producing so much content based on what it's learned from our content that it cannot necessarily be trusted always. And, you know, we've touched on biases in our talks a lot, Michael, but will it give me on my social media feed a message totally aligned to what it predicts my biases are compared to somebody else? And I think this upcoming election in the US will probably be shaped by this technology. So the printing press wasn't smart, it wasn't intelligent, it didn't predict, it didn't create its own content. Now AI can do that. It's the loss of control. It's the fact that the messages we read, the news we consume, the conversations we are having is being produced by non-human intelligent agents. And I think the question I always ask, and maybe the one other thing I thought about after reading his book, is who's making money out of this? Who is behind this? Who is in control? Because it's probably still a one of the big technology platforms for all we know. But if we ever thought we cannot trust content, it is now. But where does that leave us? Because we have to trust somebody, some news network, some whichever way they're leaning politically. It leaves us in a conundrum, and that's now going to end up us believing our own views above anything else. And we know that we as humans are so flawed that we cannot trust just what we think. We need information from the outside, but we can't trust that anymore. It's a he highlights a lot of big things that we need to talk about and collaborate about, and
And especially, I mean, if you look in South Africa, where he discusses the role of AI in shaping public opinion through algorithms, but also in the ability for AI to widen the gap between different social groups and drive inequality. And in South African society, where inequality is so high, where the Gini coefficient is still, amongst the highest in the world, that should really concern us, because what we could potentially see is this technology deepening inequality, and we certainly can't have that. So how should South Africa, a country really struggling with this inequality conundrum, approach the integration of AI to avoid further marginalizing vulnerable communities?
Michael, again, it's that balance between regulation and innovation. But we are bombarded, especially on our social media feeds, with the news that we probably want to hear, based on our behavior, based on the things we are posting, the things we are reading. And again, it could be political, right-leaning, left-leaning. It could be against a specific ethnicity or agenda for that matter. And it almost like just reinforces your biases. It's almost like after reading something, you say, I told you so. It's those people. They are causing all the trouble. Now, we cannot block something like our social media platforms. People need it. I think there's a big portion of, or a big focus here needed on education to make sure people think critically, to not just believe what their eyes see, because you can't believe your eyes anymore in this era. But I don't think the answer is just blocking all of these networks. So I think we need to educate. We can't block or control, really.
He also advocates, and I agree with you, that we need to educate, and it needs to now become foundational, almost taught at schools in the curriculum, so people are far more savvy about the way they interact with platforms, and they understand that there is algorithmic behavior behind the scenes that might be reinforcing our own biases. And if you're aware of that, then you can become far more, selective with your consumption, but also just aware that you potentially are feeding a bias in an echo chamber. But he does argue for accountability and for banning fake humans, so bots and algorithms pretending to be human, and to hold companies accountable for their algorithms' decisions. Do you think South African regulators are prepared to tackle that challenge? And what might regulation look like in a South African context? Are we saying then, these corporations need to make the algorithms public, the decision making behind them more public, maybe put certain warning labels on social media to say that your news feed, might be curated by an algorithm feeding you X. What might it look like?
Yeah, Michael, I don't think anyone globally has figured that out yet. And again, given the fact that Meta and Google and them, the main income stream is still advertising. They want as many people to click and comment on every video and every post. And just the other day, I spoke to somebody who said they, because after showing me the news feed or the article, I said, this is clearly fake. They said, but there's like 2,000 or 200,000 people who liked it, who commented. Those are probably all non-human entities, robot farms and the like. So, it really hits us in the center of what we are as humans, because everyone else likes it, because everyone else watches it. I'm afraid of losing out, so I should also do it. Now, if the big tech firms and if the leading economies in the world cannot control it, I don't know how we can do it. I don't know how we can enforce it. We should definitely look into it. Should there be a warning label? And if there's a warning label, will it even help? Because if I have an ethnicity bias or gender bias, and you just pump information towards me that enforces that bias, I will probably not even worry whether you are warning me or not. It will just reinforce what I'm thinking about that ethnicity or that group or tribe or gender. It hits us in the center of who we are as humans. It doesn't mean we can't do anything about it. I honestly don't know what we can do about it if no one in the world has figured this out yet, Michael. And again, what I do as a father is to try and teach my son, because he consumes a lot of YouTube information within the limits I've set on his platform. And we openly speak about it. He comes to me whenever he hears something new. So it's almost like a don't outsource parenthood, because the schools and the government probably can't help us.
Yeah.
Can we do this with all our kids in this country? Probably not. So this is one of those conversations where I will probably not be able to help you a lot with answers, but hopefully just highlight the urgency of we need to figure this out collectively.
If you were to look at potential blind spots, I mean, he does define democracy as this ongoing conversation between diverse information nodes, but the openness of the conversation and the independence of its nodes really derive from liberalism's rights of individual privacy and freedom of speech, yet liberalism doesn't really appear anywhere in Nexus. So he hasn't really concerned himself with liberty and, to a certain extent, justice. Do you think these are potential blind spots that might trip him up?
Yeah, look, I think, Michael, he's almost lost faith with liberalism and liberal democracies, given what this technology can do. That's one of the key things I've picked up from his work, and that's what I think listeners and obviously readers of his book should keep in mind. Hopefully we have the systems and the checks and balances to control some of these things. But I think Harari is leaning toward it's already too late. There are too many bot farms, too many of our conversations are being managed by AI algorithms. And I agree with him, democracy is a conversation. But if we are divided, and we see it all over the world, especially in the US, I think, at the moment, that there's no longer space for us to just have an adult conversation without having to agree with each other, then are we too late? Have we lost the plot? And I think that's where he is leaning towards. I am somewhat on that spectrum with him as well, perhaps not all the way. It's not entirely, because if it's too late, let's just pack up our bags and go home. But hopefully, as we've seen over the last century, maybe century and a half, that we can save ourselves from the brink one way or another. Are we too late? Time will tell, but time is not on our side in this case.
Thank you, Johan. Very interesting, but very complex themes that Nexus tries to unravel. Thanks for shedding some light on some of the challenges that AI poses for South Africa and beyond. As Harari warns, we must certainly approach the technology with caution and foresight. Now, I certainly hope that the regulators, all of us, are having these conversations. And at one point that did resonate with me, that the decisions are not being made by billionaires in venture capital fueled Silicon Valley with a return to shareholder and shareholder primacy mindset. That doesn't necessarily take into account the best for all of society, as we've seen in so many other areas where there are externalities. So thanks for your time.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice and impact.